We always knew we were loved. There's never a question that we were loved as loving our each other, loving mom and dad, being loved by mom and dad, and mom would always keep on to make sure you're loving yourself. I remember breakups, heartbroken. She'd let us mourn. She was a great ear, very sensitive ear to that kind of to pains like that, broken hearts. But only for a day. After a day, she'd crank up the AC/DC, man, and go like, now, get up. You're worth it. Her loss. Come on. Get out of bed. Uh-uh. Come on. Uh-uh. Quit moping. Lift your head up. Come on. Come on, buddy. We got this. Uh-uh. Her loss. To give you the day, no more than that. Our love in the family was physical. My mom and dad married 3 times. Divorced twice to each other. They fought. I got a great story in Green Lights of them fighting and my mom bashing and breaking my dad's nose with the phone. Him getting angry, her pulling a chef's knife out. Him dancing around, dodging these blades and then grabbing a ketchup bottle and like a matador going, touche. And splattering her with it. She's getting it out of her. I was just getting so damn mad. I'll cut you from your fucking gull over. Touche. And finally, her getting so frustrated, throwing the knife down, crying, both of them crying, coming together, embracing, going to the floor on the linoleum kitchen floor and making love. No grudges. No grounding. You get in trouble, which we did. One, we were always guilty when we got in trouble, but it was corporal. It was take your licks. Get it over with, take your licks. We're not going to ground you because that'd be taking away your time, and your time is the most valuable thing you got. So take your licks. You're not going to get injured. It's going to hurt. And don't yell, because if you yell one of the licks, you're going to get another one.
Licks.
Licks with a belt. I can't, I hate, and lying were 3 things that you got in trouble for. If I said I can't, my dad's teeth would just start to go, excuse me? Sure you're not just having trouble? I remember this one time I was going out to do my chores Saturday morning to mow the lawn, and I couldn't get the damn lawnmower to start. Checked everything, couldn't get it started. I'm going inside, I said, Dad, can you help me? I can't get the lawnmower started. And he turned around, I saw his molars, and went, and he got up, walked with me through the kitchen, through the garage, out the backyard, went to the lawnmower, messed around, pulled a couple things out, after about 10 minutes, boom, cranked it. And while the lawnmower was running right there, he came over to me and bent down and looked me in the eye. He goes, see, son, you were just having trouble. I said, I hate you to my brother because I heard the word at school and I thought it could make me feel like I was older. I thought it was like a teenage soap opera thing, and I was only 9. So I threw it out there one day at my own birthday party. My own birthday party. I said to her, I hate you. And my mom, whoop, stopped the entire party. 40 kids my age in the backyard. Stopped it. My birthday. Stopped it. Pulled me around the side of the house and said, what did you say? You don't ever use that word, especially to someone in your family. Gave me licks on the side of the house. And then went around, she said, dry your tears, resume, birthday party's back on. Don't ever use that word, especially to someone in your family. So what did I learn from don't say can't? That if you're unable to do something, you can, even if you can't pull it off, you can go find help, which means you were just having trouble. What did I learn from getting a butt whooping for saying I hate you to my brother? Well, what I was learning is the antonyms to those words, because saying I can't, lying and saying I hate you were bringing me pain. So the opposite must bring pleasure, right? Tell the truth, love, and believe that you can. Those were the values, how I remember them getting instilled in me. And to this day, I still have them. I'm trying to transfer them to my kids as well in a different way than my parents did. But I still, not even intellectually, have them. They're in my being now. So the love was tough. The love was physical. We hugged 999 times more than the hands soothed much more than they hurt. 999 times out of 1,000. But it was we were a physical, hugging, loving family. You always went to bed with an I love you and a kiss, even if it was ritual, which it was. Like a Sunday service, gotta wake up. Even if I'm not listening to the damn preacher, I'm being subconsciously reminded that you should take a day out of the week to be at the most number two, that you should go get humbled and say thank you to a higher power and thank you for the things that you have in your life and thank you for the people you have in your life and helping those people double down on those great attributes that they have. So the love was all there. I'm happy to say that I have people, you know, after that story I told about my mom and dad with the knife and the ketchup, people come and they, oh my God, I'm so sorry about your child. You had therapy. I'm like, no. And before you, please, if you don't mind, I feel like you're trespassing a little bit by coming out of the gate saying, oh my God, you were abused. No, I wasn't abused. And I never felt like I wasn't loved. Again, I felt like I let my parents down those times. Did I fear my parents? Yep. Are there a lot of things I did not do as a kid that I should not have done for fear of the consequences? Yep. We knew we were loved. I knew I was loved. My brothers knew they were loved. My second brother's adopted. He knew he was loved. And it was hard love, and it was tough love. And my mom and dad's love was passionate love. Divorced twice, married three times is a pretty good example of can't live with you, can't live without you. The one thing I remember being crystal clear to me when I was 8 years old, shaking hands with these two guys that turned out now later in life, I know they were actually dad's collectors. I shook their hand, Oak Forest Country Club parking lot. Sun was down in my eyes. They had shades on. I asked her, nice to meet you, sir. Nice to meet you, sir. And I remember my 8-year-old mind going, you know, everyone that my dad's making me say sir to, the one common denominator besides being older men is they're all fathers. And in my head, I went like, oh, that's what success is. If you become a father, you've succeeded. And that was in my 8-year-old, that was the math I did in my 8-year-old mind, and it stuck with me. So the one thing I always knew was I wanted to be was a dad. I meet Camilla, fall in love. We make 3 children. I got to 17, 15, 12. There's nothing that I can put ahead of let me put it this way. There's no time that I spend being a father that I do not feel like that is the absolute best time I could be spending.
You've had that since you were 8.
Yeah.
I've never heard that before.
I longed for that. I thought that was when you made it.
So how do you think about forgiving betrayal?
I'm trying to think of when I've been betrayed. When it's clearly betrayal, I know it's betrayal, and that person can look and go, yeah, that's what I did. I've been asked for forgiveness for that before, and I've been also seen people go, yeah, that's what I did. And they're not asking for forgiveness. They're going, yeah, that's what I did.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. You chose to hit play on this podcast today. Smart choice. Progressive loves to help people make smart choices. That's why they offer a tool called Auto Quote Explorer that allows you to compare your Progressive car insurance quote with rates from other companies. So you save time on the research and can enjoy savings when you choose the best rate for you. Give it a try after this episode at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
First response is, well, fuck you. The second one is, if that's on my mind, if that's keeping me up at night, that SOB or whatever that is, I gotta flush that. I gotta wonder why is that on my mind. I gotta forgive that deed, that person for that deed. And again, not necessarily trust them, but do my best to forgive him. And that can take me a while. And I think who it takes me the most time to forgive the betrayal is me. When and if I betray myself. Forgiving myself. Because, you know how it is, man. We forgive too quickly. We dust resilient. We hop up and dust yourself off and go, forgive you, let's do it again. We do become repeat offenders because we didn't take the time to put ourselves or feel the guilt of the wrongdoing and pay a little penance to look at and go, I don't want to feel this again. I don't want to do that action again to make myself feel this way. It doesn't feel like me. I don't want that person to have that sadness or anger with me again, or the world to have that sadness and anger from this deed. I don't want to feel that again. Mm-hmm. And that takes some pause to then go, now I forgive myself. Let's carry on and trust and be ready to do the work to say, we're not gonna just let that slide anymore. Mm-hmm. It's not just gonna be a way
to hold myself to a higher standard.
Yeah. Because it didn't pay off, because the repercussions sucked.
There is a unique sort of circle of hell that is reserved for when you keep on making the same mistake over and over again. That you've done it, you've had to pay the penance,
yeah,
say that you're sorry, and then arrive straight back at the same place.
Yeah. I think there's a hell in the mirror. Then I think it can become a living hell. I cut that poem in there, Daymares.
I love that one.
I do too. You know, nightmares suck, but at least you wake up. Mm-hmm. And they're over. It's the ones that stick with you when you wake up and go through your day that are right there. Those are the ones. That's the living hell.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're talking about. And you repeat offend enough, word gets out. The circles gets out. People doubt you. On your approach, you're like, yeah, but don't do this. I mean, all of a sudden, you're going places and you got to look over your shoulder. You got to see who's there that I didn't pay back. Who do I owe? What bridge did I burn? What person did I betray to get where I am? That's a life. That's a living hell.
Well, forget that. That in the modern world, you can move from city to city. At least you can, in some regard, leave your reputation behind. This was one of the issues of the West, right? This was how the snake oil salesmen were able to keep going because they would bounce from town to town.
Right.
However, if you lose your reputation with yourself, if you no longer trust you,
yep,
I don't keep my own word. I know that I'm not a trustworthy person. I keep making promises to myself and to other people, and I keep on breaking them. I keep doing something that hurts other people or the same person. They don't trust me anymore, and, I don't trust me anymore.
And you're 100% right. It all comes back to being a very personal act. And what some people would say, oh, that person's acting selfishly. No, they're actually being incredibly unselfish, I think, because they're pinning themselves in a living hell and having to look in the mirror and going, I don't trust you. I don't respect you. Now, how long? And I know some people that can sleep quite well with that existence. I don't know how long they can do it. So I'm bound to be some come up. It's the world's got to get small. They got to get dizzy somewhere. But, you know, where's that come from? Where's that come from for an agnostic, an atheist? Where's that come from someone in power that can easily damage somebody, but chooses not to be cruel, and they could so easily? Why not? Where's that? What's that moral compass of some sort of fairness or integrity that keeps someone having that kind of character, even though they may not believe in God or religion? That's why I'm saying this. Is it about belief? Yeah, the book's about belief. That's what I'm peddling here. I need more of it. I personally believe in God, but the whole thing's not for people that just believe in God. Believe in trying to pursue your better self, transcendent self. If you believe in the future, you believe in your kids, you believe in the past, something. Don't know what that is? Ask yourself what you die for. Start there. Everyone kind of believes in something. There's an argument that even nihilists do believe in nothing. Nothing's even something, you know? I don't know how you double down on nothing, but...
Double nothing.
Yeah.
There's an opposite end to this scale as well, that continuing to sort of betray yourself. Sometimes you can do everything right and still not get the result that you wanted. And that seems like a really tough pill to swallow for people. I think that's why people become uncomfortable with fully feeling their emotions.
Yeah.
So where do you go? What do you think when I really, I gave it my all there. I bared myself and I still got kicked in the nuts.
Yeah. Not only did I feel like I deserve it, I feel like I earned it and I still didn't get it. Wait a minute, but you said that's the playbook and I followed the playbook. You said these were the rules and the regulations. I followed it and I was good at it. I still didn't get it.
Well, I suppose that's why we have entrepreneurs and criminals and...
I mean, I have to... I think I naturally come back. And look, I hustle. I'm a hustler. I'm not puritanical. I'm not making... I'm not trying to preach a absolute straight and narrow way to go things. I bullshitted my way into things and faked my way into making things. Pulled off stunts. But I've never been able to really live with, by hook or by crook, I'll get it how I can get it. I'll lie, cheat, and steal to get it. I got the prize, and I'm still okay. I got it. My own shadow chases me down in the middle of the night, and those nightmares do become my own daymares. Now, the getting going for it and not getting it, which we see a lot now. Right now, I think we're living in times where one of the indirect examples we'll see from leaders, some leadership is, for who's got the power? Winner. Okay. So what are the ethics? Well, whatever the winner does. Yeah, but the winner, like, and pillaged and lied and cheated and stole to get the prize. But he won. Wait a minute. You moved the goalpost while I had the ball was in the air, man. Is that okay? They won. And I'm not buying to say, I'm not ready to purchase that. Okay, that's just how it is. And I'm in no way foolish enough to think that everybody out there is on their best behavior. No, me neither. But I'm not ready for just, hey, however you can pull it off and however many people you crumple along the way, there ain't no rules, regulations. Oh, and actually, if you do follow the rules, you're a sucker. Fuck you. What's the game for then? We're going to get dizzy on that. That's going to self-implode. That's not the wild, wild west. That's more than that. That's upside down and backwards and the foot's on the other shoe. That's not going to last. That doesn't have any long-term ROI for us personally or collectively as humanity, I don't think. So we've got to police that ourselves. Huh. You know, and I think that's my hunch is that we start with that. Everyone, no matter how much they're thinking globally or collectively, it all starts with something very, very personal. And that's where a revolution could begin. A revolution of evolution would begin, that each person goes, I'm going to go one step further. As I talk about, to salvage my character, or one step further before I pull the parachute, quit. I think that's how I could really inch forward and evolve in a way.